Welcome to Become an Idol. I'm Dr. Robin Sargent, owner of Idol Courses. This is the place where newbies come to learn and veterans share their knowledge. I have here with me today Ross Stevenson, and he is the Chief Learning Strategist at Steal These Thoughts. He also does some incredible courses that he sells on how to learn AI for learning and development. I'm sure that I have not done any of that justice for you, Ross. Will you please do a better job of introducing yourself?
No, you're pretty good, to be fair. So yeah, as you were saying, so I'm a Chief Learning Strategist at my own organization. So obviously I've given myself that title, which I'm allowed to do, which is always awesome. And so the long story short, I have been in the L&D industry for about 15 years. So I've worked at big corporates, I've worked at scale-ups and startups. Basically, my main bag is helping people leverage digital technology, upgrade their digital intelligence, and improving learning and performance through tech. So that's really my bag. And as you say, I do a bunch of stuff. So I have a newsletter, I have some courses that I provide to L&D pros so they can basically be as geeky as me. And that is how I spend my time pretty much.
And I'm as geeky as you because I follow you, and that's how I invited you to this podcast. Cool. And so I want you to share a little bit of that story that you share with me, Ross, about how you got into this particular space and launched your business full time.
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of Steal These Thoughts itself, it was a random Sunday afternoon idea, probably about 8 years ago, where at this point, I had been specifically in the digital learning space for a large corporation at that point for about 4 or 5 years. And basically, it came from I got a lot of people that used to reach out to me because I'd be on the conference circuit in the UK and Europe. And they were like, oh, it sounds like you're doing some really cool stuff. Can I get half hour of your time? The problem I found was I really wanted to help people, but I just couldn't talk to all those people or serve all those people all the time with my own life and my own job. So basically, I had the idea of what if I just start like writing? I write articles about how I do this stuff or how I think about this stuff. And then people could pick it up and I can have a model of one to many instead of me struggling to have phone calls or people hating me because I wouldn't take their phone calls or reply to their LinkedIn messages. So that's really where it came from. There was no real plan behind it. It was just write some stuff, push it out there. If people find value in it, great. If I can learn from other people and they can learn from me, fantastic. And I was also keen to understand very much from a self-education standpoint, you know, how would you build a website? How would you build a newsletter? What's involved in that to kind of craft and build my own skills? So that's kind of really where that started. I have been doing it actually on the side for about 7 years. So I've been continuing my L&D career, going through management roles, head of L&D, always still doing this thing on the side for about 15, 20 hours a week, just because I really enjoy it. And then I was saying earlier on, in the middle of last year, I just decided, you know what? Let me take that leap of faith and just go and do this thing on my own, scale this out, and really focusing on helping L&D pros with understanding current digital technology. How can they improve themselves? Because obviously we live in a digital world. We need to understand the language of digital tech. And how can they use that in their workplaces too? So how can they leverage tech that they've got or new tech on the scene to help people in a learning and performance strategy? So basically what's happened is I've taken everything I was doing on the side and 20x that over the last year to say, how can I build a service for people in that way? And so that's what I do now, pretty much mostly through LinkedIn, obviously, where you see me too, and my weekly newsletter where, you know, I have ridiculous amounts of people. I think it's 3,000-4,000 people now who follow that weekly. And I just kind of share strategies and tools and techniques from there, pretty much all focused on, as I say, that subject of how do we leverage tech. And the reason why I did that is because I am a tech nerd. I was actually background as a software engineer and project manager, so I understand that world and how to translate it. And I think in our industry, it's probably one of those things that's misunderstood or not as well understood, maybe in some sectors, where I think we're really good at maybe more of the human stuff and leadership stuff and that, but not so good at how do we use technology to enhance what we're doing. And evidently, the big sexy topic at the moment is artificial intelligence and how do we use that to enhance and automate and all this stuff for L&D? So yeah, that's it really.
And I mean, just that space alone, there's just so many avenues that you can go in. There's so many different things that you have been sharing. Now, you have, how many courses do you have right now? Is it one or do you have a couple? What is?
I have one. Yeah. So I just have one. And that's because, as you know, they take a long time to build and maintain and keep maintaining. So I have what's called the AI for L&D Crash Course. So basically that was born out of, I've been, you know, like I say, in a tech space for years. I've been specifically looking at more kind of back-end artificial intelligence than generative artificial intelligence for years. But obviously I've been working with companies on AI from a generative AI perspective for probably last 18 months now. So I basically decided to say, how can I upskill people quicker? Because they don't want to spend 18 months doing what I've been doing, going through all this stuff. They haven't got the time to do that. So basically, I created a course that said, let me teach you the core fundamentals that you need to know in 2 hours. And really, that covers education, as you know, that's the biggest thing. You know, what is generative AI? How does it fit under the umbrella of artificial intelligence? How do I go from curious to confident? And then getting really practical and meaningful with the applications. Because I think what we all see online is kind of a lot of gimmicks most of the time around, oh, look, I'm using ChatGPT to create this picture, or I've got this perfect prompt, and et cetera, et cetera. That's cool from a personal standpoint. But from a professional standpoint, if you're an L&D pro who wants to enhance the work that they're doing or get some support, that's not really going to help you at all. So what I wanted to do was bring something to the market or bring an option that said, hey, let me show you how you can be practical and how you can use this in a meaningful way so you can look smarter, you can work smarter, and you can get good results as well. So that's, I think I've had that out since July last year. And the reason why that's the only course is I update it every month. So my promise basically to people has been that if you bought it when it first came out, it'll be a very different product now because it will contain probably 10 times the knowledge that I had at the time. And the reason why I do that is because what I wanted to bring was not a one and done, because artificial intelligence, especially generative artificial intelligence, is evolving every day. It's never going to be one and done and it'll be outdated. But what I wanted to do was say, the more that I learn, the more the students learn. So every time I go work with a company and we do something new and there's a case study, or if I get a new tool and I'm working with a team to understand how does it work, what are the applications, I provide that into the course. Because I think the best experiences, in my opinion, are, and we talk about the industry, they're continuous. So it'd be useless for me to say, here's a course I created in July 23, but it's not been updated, because it would already be out of date in the next few weeks. So the whole idea is to give people that experience of every time you come back, you know, every couple of weeks, every month, it's like, okay, there's a new thing for me to learn. There's a new thing for me to understand, a new thing to add to my toolkit. So yeah, that is my kind of one and only focus at the moment, is making that as good as possible. So, you know, students can get what they need from it. And at the end of the day, the whole point of it is to be quick, but to be efficient, and also to make people feel more comfortable. I think what I noticed is that people feel very unsure about this moment in time in this technology. So if I could do my little bit, as in, can I give you some more confidence in your role and the capability to use it? I think it's job done.
Yeah. I mean, even just in my own experience, showing my own students, even the, what you call the gimmicky parts of ChatGPT, just them watching me put in a prompt and showing how it works, you get the oohs and the ahs, but just like you said, it's capable of doing so much more. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people are thinking, Ross, like, oh, those are the gimmicky parts. So what are the things about generative AI that are actually more useful for people in learning and development? What are some of those high level things?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And I suppose what I would preface is that everything is down to context. And the reason why I say that is because I'll give you a couple of examples when I'm working with companies, is that if you talk to an enterprise company, using ChatGPT to write copy for courses or emails that feels gimmicky for them. They got enough resource to do that. That's not going to enhance what they're doing. But if you're talking to a scale up of a company of 300 people, maybe, and an L&D person is on their own, actually that use case is probably very meaningful and practical. because they haven't got the capability to do that. So there's always context layered on what you use it for. There's no one right way or wrong way to use it. It just depends on your context and how you're, you know, the work that you're doing. I would think, well, actually, I would say that the ones that I use the most and I think are really practical for everyone across the board is one, using it as a thought partner. So a lot of people use it as a content creation machine because that's kind of how it's been advertised in social media. But actually what you can do is use it as a thought partner to brainstorm ideas. You can do very well in throwing in your ideas to these tools and saying, hey, look, I've got these ideas for a learning experience. This is my outline. Can you take a look at this, review it with me, and ask me questions about it to give me clearer thinking on, you know, how could it work? Poke holes in this. Don't be afraid to challenge my thesis on that. Let's pull in data from external sources to see any best practices that might help me improve the course. And it's just a really good way to enhance your own thinking and improve your work at the same time. And it's nothing to do with content creation. It is like a lot of these tools are called now, it's a co-pilot. So you're working in collaboration to be like, how can we build a better product or a better experience together? And that's really powerful for a number of reasons. I think if you're, like most of us are, if you're an L&D pro on your own, to have another, although artificial, brain to bounce stuff off of and say, is there any case studies you can share with me on this? Are there new techniques? Here's what I'm thinking about. Poke holes in this. That's really helpful for people to kind of build the best product. And then on top of that, and this depends on the conversational AI tool you're using, and if you're using kind of paid or free plans, having what I like to call as a go-to data analyst. So a lot of the tools do this. So if you're using ChatGPT and you're listening to this, you need a paid for plan, but you can use other tools called Perplexity and Claude by Anthropic, and you will get the ability to upload PDFs, text files, Excel documents for free. And the great thing about using these tools as a data analyst is you could constrain them and say, you know, I'm going to give you a Excel file of data on one of my recent learning experiences with feedback. And then you can work with that tool to understand what the trends, what are the insights you need to know. Based on those insights, what actions that you could take? And instead of having to do that manually, which may be, you know, depending upon the size of the work you're doing, hours or days, you could do that in minutes because AI can work through that very quickly and it can spoil that and it can get up to you. Much like if you need to go through reports or research, which a lot of us do, and let's be frank, they're 100 pages long, sometimes more. You could upload those into a conversational AI tool and you can say, hey, these are the things I need to know. This is the work that I'm doing. Can you pull out these insights for me that I can investigate? And again, it's enhancing the work that you're already doing, but allowing you to do that at speed and quality, and then add in your own kind of unique humanness. So I say the last one on top of that is, because you've got thought partner, you've got data analyst, but then you've also got a design partner as well. So I work with companies where we work with their LXD teams, and then we basically look at how can we use, for example, let's take ChatGPT, where we will prompt it with the LXD principles that a team will use, how they design, kind of how they think. And then we'll kind of use it as like an additional team member to provide kind of provocative or devil's advocate takes just to give a different point of view. So those three for me, I think are very beneficial for L&D industry, even other industries too. And they're all beyond the kind of content creation matrix. And I always reference it because they'll help you unlock more of your human skills and your human intelligence. And it also makes you look smarter as well. So,
yeah, I love how you brought up that it's better as a thought partner and a data analyst and a design partner, because if you have it try to write your content from scratch for you, well, there's a couple of issues, just kind of like what you said, it's all about context. Not only is it, you know, maybe lower tier for a large enterprise, but also those enterprises, one of them is our client, and they don't want any AI involved in the design process because the proprietary information that they have and also plagiarism, and especially when they're building their certifications for their tech that they are training people on. And I was just wondering if that was something else that you found, or as far as.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's interesting, right? If we take, and obviously because I'm there at the moment, I take America in general and look at some of this like data that's come out. So I was looking at some data a few months ago, and what it was saying is there's a huge proportion of companies that are banning generative AI tools, but there's a huge proportion of workers that are using them in secret to do the tasks. So there's this kind of really funny disparity between what companies want and what is actually happening. Now, I think the issue we have currently is that for a lot of organizations of all levels, there's very little education on what happens with data and actually what tools are available that are specifically locked down for company use. So I'll give you an example. So with ChatGPT, you actually have three levels of access that you can buy. So as a general consumer, we can each buy a license for $20, which is still connected into ChatGPT. It's not what we call fine-tuned. So it's the world's data and you're putting more into that data as well. Now, if you're an organization, you have two routes. So ChatGPT offer a license called Teams. So if you've got a small team of four or five people, you can buy that license. And that version of ChatGPT will be what's called fine-tuned. So what fine-tuned means is that it's locked down to company data only. So it's only trained on the data your company gives it. And it doesn't give that data back to OpenAI, who create ChatGPT. So effectively what that means is it is a secure conversational AI model that is trained just on companies' data, and you can use it safe in the knowledge that anything that it gives you is based on pre-existing company data. And then the second kind of level, the third level, is the enterprise level. So ChatGPT also offer an enterprise license. So it's like, I believe it's over 2,000 or companies over 2,000 employees. And what that basically allows you to do is the same thing. So you get like a base model of ChatGPT that doesn't send any data back to OpenAI. It can't be seen by anyone else. It's locked down to just your company. Your company can train it on just their data and use it for that. So examples of that would be in the consultancy world, KPMG have their own conversational AI model, which is just like that. So they have it trained on KPMG data. Staff use it to work on a myriad of different tasks across the organization. That data stays in-house to KPMG's organization. And their conversational AI gets smarter from the data that people feed into it. So the great thing about that is they can know that they're safe in if they do want to share proprietary information or private information, they can do that in the walls of the KPMG conversational AI because it's locked down to the company, trained on the company's data, and only gives out information verified by the company. You know, of course, there's always going to be certain nuances in these tools because regardless of doing that, these tools are what we call kind of like probability engines. So most of the applications we use in a technology world, and I'll give an example because I appreciate some people will listen to this and think, what the hell is he talking about? So we basically, in our world, we use what's called a lot of deterministic systems. So when you go onto Google and you say, give me a flight from the UK to Lithuania, if you put that instruction in every time, you'll get the same answer. You'll get the same flight time, the same flight number, the same flight path. If you were to do that with ChatGPT, it's highly likely to give you a different answer every single time. Because what it's doing, it's trained on a set of data where it's trying to please you. And because it's a probabilistic engine, it's just making up probabilities. It's trying to figure out what you want the answer to. It's not actually giving you a determined result. So what makes it really great is also what can be its downfall. That's why what's really important is the data that's input into it. So having good data means good outputs. You know, bad data means crap outputs. But from the company perspective, there's so many options now. So, you know, OpenAI, ChatGPT is one. You've got Microsoft Copilot now. So you can buy enterprise licenses. I think they're about $50 a user at the moment in time. More companies are doing this. So GitHub, which is owned by Microsoft, you've got Salesforce as well. It's got their own kind of GPT. So basically what companies are doing, you can build your own conversational AI and you can lock it down and use it for your own data. Like example, I've got my own downloaded large language model on my Mac. So I have one that's completely locked down to me, that's trained on my data. No one else can access it. And I use it to do stuff for me completely offline. So it never needs to be connected. So I have a model like that. So there's loads of ways you could do it. But my main point is, because there's little education for companies on, actually, yeah, there is enterprise licenses and there's enterprise tools, they're kind of just saying, well, we're just going to outright ban it because we don't understand that. So I think what we're experiencing right now is a curve of how did these companies, all these different generative AI companies, kind of get in of enterprises and say, oh, hey, so-and-so, you know, this is how we could do this for your company. And we've seen it already, because I'll give you another example as well. In the States, Walmart have announced they're going to launch their own generative AI tool. I don't know what it's called yet. They're going to have it for 50,000 employees across all of their company. It's going to be locked down to Walmart, trained on their data, specific for employees. So it's happening. There just needs to be a better education on what are the options for me if I'm a huge enterprise company. To be quite frank, that's got a lot to lose if we screw up and do the wrong thing and handing over data that we shouldn't be.
That's interesting, because you're right. They are trying to re-educate the public. I even saw a Salesforce commercial where it was like no other Salesforce commercial, and that the focus of it was your data, not our product. As if like they were trying to reinforce that we're not stealing your data because we have included AI.
Yeah, 100%. I think they've got an interesting product called Einstein, for whatever reason, Einstein GPT, which is kind of their version of ChatGPT, and you could call it that, and they are rolling that out to customers. I think it's interesting because we've had AI in the background as a kind of normal artificial intelligence for the last 66 years in most of our technology. It powers social media algorithms, it powers what we do on Netflix and Amazon and all this kind of stuff. But generative AI, you know, obviously people find a bit more scarier because they can physically see themselves putting the data in, whereas there's other tools you interact with, you're not so conscious that every time you hit a like, leave a comment, whatever, you're giving over your data. So it's kind of similar in that respect too. But yeah, there's a definite a brand and education element that needs to happen, because if we look at when generative AI first came out, like mostly in human society, is that we look at it from a negative standpoint. It could take over the world, or it could do this, or we could all lose our jobs, instead of being, how do we find a balance between understanding technology, how we can use it, and getting that more view of here's the opportunities, but here's also the limitations. Because I think there are a lot of limitations, to be quite honest. I use it daily and there are limitations. You're not going to do everything with it and you don't need to. There's going to be some stuff that takes too long to do generative AI that you can do in 5 minutes. That's the beauty of being humans and having the intelligence that we do, is that we can do those things. So it's just getting a bit of perspective in that. But I think this year is probably, maybe even 2025 as well, I think it'll probably take up that time where we will start to see more of this coming in to companies, because a lot of these tools that I mentioned have only been active for 4 or 5 months. So since about October last year for enterprise level. So still, we're really, really early in that journey.
So what's also interesting too, probably, Ross, is that you've had your course out for about a year now and you've been updating it. And I think I saw somewhere you've had at least 300 students or somewhere.
True,
around, around that number. And I'm just curious, what are some of the things that have surprised you about how the students have gone on to use your training or any of their case studies? Or because a lot of people who listen to this, they are brand new to even instructional design. So they probably need, maybe they haven't even gotten that far, but I imagine there's a lot they could take away just from hearing what your other students have done with what they've learned.
Yeah, it's definitely varied. So I'll give you a few examples. So I've had a number of students that have just been, in their words, kind of like blown away by the educational element and have gone to take that to actually train their own L&D teams, which I love to see, like to take some of the content and upskill their L&D teams, even upskill other teams in their organization. I've had people at enterprise companies, as an example, work on using content from there to create a proposal of why they should try and use generative AI tools, which I think is great, because if they can take what they've learned from there and show practical examples of how it can be used in an organization, it's great. And one thing I wanted to do in the course and continue to do is whenever these fancy reports come out about performance in the workplace and AI, I'm always pumping those stats into the course. So then, you know, if an L&D leader takes it, they can go, well, you know, on this course, I found out Harvard and Boston Consulting Group did a joint report where they found out that giving consultants ChatGPT resulted in a 40% increase in the quality of their work. And this is how they did it. So there's stuff like that where that's really cool to see people take that and put a business case together to give their senior leaders to say, this could be a useful tool in the organization. And then there's other stories where people would just reach out to me and say, hey, look, you know, I've used some of these prompts for the thought partner. It's really helped me change the way I'm designing my experiences. Even some people, it still astounds me. They're like, you know, some of what you've given me has helped me feel like way more confident in technology, which I never kind of, when I first did it, I kind of got knowledge bias because I'm a techie geek. So I don't expect the kind of people to be thinking, oh, this is amazing. I keep thinking, oh, they probably know this. They're just going to go for it. But because I have that knowledge bias, I don't see it from their side of the world. So some people have just become very confident in, oh, I get it now. Oh, you've explained it in a way that makes sense. Because if you see my content online, I'm a pretty laid back, jovial guy. I'm not going to be TED Talk, Harvard University kind of conversation. Now, I've got a lot of GIFs. I've got a lot of memes. I try and explain stuff and break it down in a very simple way. So that's really good too. And I think other use cases have just been, just seen L&D pros, and people tag me on LinkedIn, which I find funny sometimes, where they just go on ChatGPT and they're basically showing me how they've used the different use cases of a thought partner or data analyst is quite a popular one. So once I've shown people to do that, I mean, I've had so many people just go crazy with sending me screenshots of, oh my God, I've just put my PDF report in here and I've been able to get these insights really quick. Like my manager thought this was awesome. I never told them I used ChatGPT. So there's little things like that where, you know, something that seems small to me because I'm in that world, to some people is just so huge and it makes them feel more confident. It makes them feel smarter. It gives them a bit of an edge. Then it goes on. So yeah, that's what I like to see on that there. And I'm probably doing a disservice because there's some great video testimonials on the landing page as well that people have very kindly put up there to talk about what they've used it for and their takeaways and how they're using it. So I'm really intrigued, probably like you do as well, when I read people's feedback. There's some funny bits in there that come out sometimes. And there's always some good bits as well that I can work on. So yeah, but the main thing is, if I can see it's helping people, that's why I kind of continue to do it. Because at the end of the day, if people give me feedback saying, you know, well, this is rubbish, honestly, what you're talking about, then I'd stop doing it. But it seems to be that, yeah, I think going back to the context bit, I think depending upon your context, it's going to give different things to different people. You know, if you know nothing at all, you're probably going to be like, oh my God, this is like, I've just come into the matrix. If you know a little bit, you're going to get a bit more. If you're a bit more experienced, you know, it's kind of going to be like having a conversation with someone else is at that level and seeing different ways that you can work, different ways that you can think. So I'm excited to see more of that from the kind of the people in that community who are, as I say, randomly tagging me into LinkedIn posts or videos.
Well, you've been their guide and they want to show you that they are a good student. So I had another question, which was, actually it was a statement. You put out a post, I think yesterday, even showing kind of people's access to AI across the world. And so even just kind of going back to your point of like, you have your own knowledge bias and you think, well, everybody knows this, but even from that, your own bar chart that you showed, I think it was yesterday. Yeah. About just how little people are actually exposed to.
Yeah, they are. They are. Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is a really interesting thing. So I'll give you some other stats. So middle of last year, I went to go speak to 130 L&D teams globally. So this kind of covers Central Europe, UK, Ireland, America, or call it Central America if you want to, and even some areas of South Asia as well. And all of these people that I spoke to, so what was really interesting was I had a really high percentile, I think it was about 80 percentile of basically people saying, I'm aware of AI tools, my company's buying them, and I'm going to have to use them at some point. But then the lowest marker was people said to me, I know nothing about AI. So basically people were going, I don't know anything. So it was really interesting to say you had 80% of people telling me, my company's looking at this. And then when I said, you know, how good is your AI knowledge? And most of them said, I haven't got any at all. So there is this huge kind of barrier of these tools are coming in really thick and fast, but there's just not the kind of education, not outside of what I call some of the ridiculous YouTube videos of 19-year-olds trying to tell you how do you earn £1,000 a day with these 2,500 tools or something like that. You know, in terms of serious actual education on how does this stuff work, the barometer is huge. And I still think it's there. And I think that's the barrier to practical and meaningful application. It's just starting with the basics in what is actually this thing. And I probably think, right, I was too young at that point, but if I think about when the internet first came in back in the kind of early 90s, when it became more kind of accessible and mainstream, you know, you look at the headlines back then, you could see papers and media demonizing it, saying it was never going to take off, you know, and look where we are now in the digital economy. Exactly. Yeah. And so it goes back to that principle of there was very little education then. So we're kind of all still stumbling. We're all figuring out stuff. Even people that I talk to who are AI engineers, they're just building stuff. They don't actually know what's going to happen with it. They're building the tech to enable people. So it's just really interesting to see where that goes. But yeah, there's lots of data at the moment that just continues to show that same thing of loads of AI tools are coming in, but people just aren't prepared. They aren't being given the education, the skills that's actually going to help them navigate this. So I think we're going to continue to see this conversation of not using AI or either being on the fence or not sure what to do, which I think is a shame because there's great opportunities there. But I get it. It's not easily accessible. It's not always consumable, which is why for me, I did something specific for L&D people because that's my world. Because like, how does it make sense for us on that end there? But one thing we do see at the moment, and I've actually just finished writing this, and I think it comes out Sunday or Monday, I can't remember. So I basically just spent probably about 2 months going through about 7 different reports, global reports on performance with conversational AI technologies in the workplace, because now we've been down this road for like 18 months, we're getting more data coming in. What was conclusive across all the reports was that conversational AI tools actually improve the speed and quality of bridging the skills gap for low-skilled workers. So these were reports from, it was Nielsen Norman Group, the National Bureau of Economic Statistics, Harvard, Boston Consulting Group, loads of big names. They'd done reports in different work sectors. They all found the same thing. Low-skilled workers were able to move faster, be better, upgrade their skills. Even if they stopped using conversational AI afterwards, they still became better because of what they learned. And then those who were already highly skilled, they didn't see a huge impact, but what they saw was a 10% enhancement on what they were already doing, which I still think is pretty good if you're operating at a high level. So the things that we know already is that these can be good for a learning performance tool. And there's more and more data coming out to say, well, actually, if you use this in the right way, it can be super powerful. And we can kind of balance this field of skill levels of people. But the barrier, as you say, is that very few people are actually experimenting with the tools or have the education to confidently say, well, how do we do that? So a lot of my work at my L&D teams is that to say, look, we've got this load of data, which is saying to us, it is all possible. But before we can even conceive doing that, what we need to do is upgrade the population's knowledge on what is this technology? How does it work? And how do I use it? You know, and it's probably like if we think about when social media tools first started coming out in the early 2000s, Facebooks and Twitters, people didn't know how to use that. They didn't understand that infrastructure or the algorithms, but now we do. So it's the same thing. We just need the education.
And I mean, it's so interesting what you said about how low-skill workers and high-skill workers, they all benefited just from interacting with this AI. And it kind of made me think about how they're starting to use AI as tutors and teachers, even in the K-12 education space. And just curious even about where that will go for them. If it helps the adults improve their skills, is it going to be the same for children as well, getting early exposure to that? I don't know.
That's the thing, isn't it? We don't know. That's the weird thing. We're kind of on this journey, kind of all figuring it out. I think one thing I like from the adult learning perspective is, I think in the L&D industry, if you look at any report for the last decade, in the top five has always been personalized learning. Always comes up. Companies use that tagline all the time. I think when you talk to most people and you say, what do you mean by personalized learning? Very few of them can actually explain what they mean by that. But I think spending the last kind of 18 months to 2 years working at these conversational AI tools, I think they are actually the solution to that, because they are really the only tool where you can tell it what it needs to know about you, and it can give you tailored responses to that. There's, you know, I'm sure providers will disagree with me. I don't think there's any LMS or LXP that exists right now that can specifically go, you're this person at this company, this is your skill level, this is how you like to work, so let me give you content and guidance based on that. Whereas the ChatGPTs of this world can do that, because what you're able to do is tell them all of that, they're able to absorb that, and then they're able to tailor their responses to that. So I think there's definitely something there in the fact of when we talk about reaching people where they are and trying to help people at different skill levels, you know, I think we've kind of got this thing, not fully formed, but we've got something there where we can say, well, if we can keep working at that, that's potentially something that's really going to help people get better. And I think we see that already. I mean, there's a couple of examples with, I typically use ChatGPT to, I mean, I've not coded in a long time, but I've been using it to help me code again on my website and other stuff. I've used it to help me with Excel documents, with VLOOKUPs and macros that I forget all the time because I only use them every 6 months. And it's stuff like that. But the reason why that works really well is because I can tell that tool specifically, what is my skill level? What don't I know? And I can ask it to be as detailed as possible as this, where I can't do that on an LMS or LXP. I'll get one article, but I can't say to the article, change the article so you make it so descriptive a five-year-old could understand it. But whereas ChatGPT can do that. So I think there's definitely a benefit from the adult learning perspective there, where it's a great opportunity. And I would be pretty sad if we didn't do something of that as an industry and say, hey, that may really excel what we're doing. But as we've discussed, I think we need to get around the whole societal conversation of how, you know, the good, the bad, the ethics. But we've still got that problem with social media. It's been 15 years and we're seeing big tech in court all the time explaining all this stuff. So I don't know where that's going to go.
Yeah. And even also the specificity you get to what it is that you need to learn from a ChatGPT rather than, you know, a personalized LMS. Mm. Like, for example, I needed the HTML code for a button with the shadow with the color. And I just asked for it and there it gets. Otherwise, if it's a personalized learning LRS, yeah, or whatever, then what do I got to do? I got to wade through a whole course.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a crazy but beautiful thing at the same time when, like, because generally what you would do is you go to Google and you say to Google, I need to know how to do this. And then Google would go, here's 20,000 results. And then you as the human have to go and try wade through them. But the difference nowadays is you could just boot up ChatGPT or Microsoft Copilot and you can just copy and paste what you're doing. And you can say, this is the error that I'm getting. So it's already super specific. And then you can go, this is what I'm trying to achieve. And I'm getting the error when I try to do this. And I'm still startled even today when the response that comes back is so nuanced, so refined in what I'm doing, and explains it to me step by step and it works. And I'm just like, wow, that's like, if I was to Google that, that would probably take me maybe 2 hours to find what I needed to know. Because what I need to do is that as a human, I need to go through Reddit forums or GitHub forums or people's blogs and figure out, is this the right thing? Is it not? But then this tool does it in 15 seconds because I'm able to be so precise and say, this is exactly what I'm doing. And it can view my screen while I'm doing it. And it goes, oh, I can see what the issue is here. This is because of this marker here instead of that. And I'm just like, wow, like that is, you know, for me, real kind of performance or learning in the flow of work, whatever people want to call it, because I didn't have to leave my screen. I didn't have to stop and do anything. Yeah. I could just open up the assistant on the side and I said, I need help with this. This is the thing that's happening to me. What do I do? And it, yeah, just did it. So that's one way you can enhance.
So people are like, okay, well, I want to start right now. I want to go play. And I think the other thing is too, is like, I don't know if this is like something about us being like tech nerds or really loving technology. I've always loved tech toys, that the more we do with it, the more just like, it's just so cool. It's just so impressive. I can't wait to see where it's going. But I think people who have no idea, they don't know what it is to love this type of tech yet. So where would you tell them to start? I know you've given them a couple of ideas, you know, data analyzing and things like that. But what do you tell? What's kind of the things you tell those people that are like, I'm just learning to be an instructional designer.
Get started? It's a good question. I think the simplest thing that I think we all forget as we grow up as well is just to kind of play and experiment. So you can open a free account with many tools today. Nothing bad's going to happen to you. You know, you can play around it from a personal purpose. My advice to everyone is always, this is the biggest one, you know, go get a free ChatGPT account. You can do it in seconds. Play around with that for 6 weeks. You know, spend time on, there's, you know, I've got, I think, about 63 videos on YouTube with how-to tutorials to use ChatGPT. There are thousands of other people as well. You know, pick whoever kind of works for you and kind of lends to helping you with the tasks that you're doing. And just experiment, just play, but just focus on that tool. What I say is don't hop around. Don't get bought into the shiny object syndrome. That's the worst thing to do because you jump around from tool to tool pretty much. So I would say go get a free ChatGPT account. Go play around with some stuff. You know, look at some of the stuff online that's freely available around how to use ChatGPT, prompts to start with, and just get going and just experiment, see how it works. Get a bit of understanding, and through that experimentation, you will learn a lot more, to be quite honest, than you will do from lots of things, because you'll bring that into your own context. So I would say do that as a kind of first port of call. If you want to get nerdier, I think that's then when you start to bring in stuff like specific courses in your field of work, specific people to follow on different social channels. But right at the beginning, get on ChatGPT, spend 6 weeks, have a play around, get comfortable with working with that, and then just scale up from there. And that's it, really.
I love it. Just start with childlike wonder and don't worry, you're not going to break anything.
100%. Yeah, 100%.
All right, Ross. Well, it's my final question for you. And what is your best and final advice for those that are looking to become an instructional designer?
Very good question. I think it's going to sound cliche, but it's so true because we're in that industry. I think just keep learning, right? I think just keep going on for those opportunities, because I think in our, whether it's the specific instructional design community, whether it's the overall L&D community or talent development community, there is so much out there to learn and so many people who are offering that from, you know, many different realms. You know, there's you, there's myself, there's thousands of others who are doing this. So just keep learning. That you'll always find the answer for sure. You just need to be curious enough. And I think we lose that in any field is the curiosity. So just keep focusing on that is my best thing. I really wish I had a better way to articulate that, but I think that's the best raw way I can say that.
I think learning and curiosity is a beautiful piece of advice, and it's going to serve you from the beginning all the way to the end of your career.
100%. Yeah. And I think, look, whatever you want to do with your career, I agree. You know, if you haven't got curiosity, I don't think you're going to get far in that really. So be curious, play around. Don't be afraid.
Ross, thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate you coming on the Become an Idol podcast.
Thank you for having me. Lovely to chat.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find the show notes for this episode at idlecourses.com. If you like this podcast and you want to become an instructional designer, an online learning developer, join me in the Idol Courses Academy, where you'll learn to build all the assets you need to land your first instructional design job, early access to this podcast, tutorials for how to use the e-learning authoring tools, templates for everything course building, and paid instructional design experience opportunities. Go to idlecourses.com/academy and enroll or get on the wait list. Now get out there and build transcendent courses.